Blog Talk Radio.
How many bullets you got in you?
16, I think.
Might be good to have a doctor look at you sometime.
Might be good to have a doctor look at you sometime.
I ain't got no bullets in me.
Because I was covered.
You may have heard there was a prison break. It was Bonnie and Clyde. Governor, this has to end.
They've committed dozens of armed robberies and several cold-blooded murders.
What do you plan to do about Bonnie and Clyde?
We will capture them. Write that down and underline it twice.
There's only one man who can take them down.
I'll come back.
Hey, you got room for one more?
Not even Pat. Ah, Judas Priest, get in.
This is 1934. Gangsters, submachine guns. And you put cowboys on Bunny and Clyde?
Texas Rangers.
I like how he says that. Texas Rangers, as if that's the answer. And in this case, it was the answer. Welcome, everybody, to a special episode of Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and that clip you just heard was from The Highwaymen. This is the Netflix film that is out today. It's been out in theaters last week, but it's out on Netflix today, March 29th. And it's a different take on the Bonnie and Clyde story. This is not about the criminal duo themselves, although they are obviously part of it. It's about the Texas Rangers who tracked them down and killed them. Kevin Costner stars as Frank Hamer, and Woody Harrelson plays his partner, Manny Gault. These are real-life Texas Rangers, arguably the two most famous Texas Rangers ever. And the story is about them and how they're these old-school lawmen who are tracking down these criminal couple who are not just having a murder spree across the country, but they are becoming famous for it. And they're becoming celebrities for it as people see them as a sort of Robin Hood duo stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. The reality was something quite different. And the movie is an answer to the 1967 Arthur Penn film, which did not depict the Rangers who captured them in a very good light at all. So this movie is sort of an answer to that. So I had a chance to sit down and talk with John Lee Hancock, the director. You know him from movies like The Blind Side and The Founder, and writer John Fusco, who was trying to get this movie made for a very long time. I did something I normally don't do with this interview, which is I kept some of our banter in the beginning of the interview, because Fusco wrote one of my favorite movies growing up as a kid, a film called Crossroads. And no, not the Britney Spears Crossroads. This is a very different one that starred Ralph Macchio and Jamie Gertz and John Seneca. It's a blues movie about a jazz musician, Willie Brown, who made a pact with the devil. It's a really great film, and I had a chance when I saw I was going to be talking to John Fusco, I had to bring it up to him, so I kept that part in here. But anyway, here is my interview with John Lee Hancock and John Fusco to talk about The Highwaymen. I hope you enjoy it.
Before we get started, I got to say something to you because you wrote one of my favorite movies growing up as a kid, Crossroads.
Oh man!
My uncle showed me that movie like every weekend. He absolutely loved it.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up here.
In
Alexandria, Virginia, and
oh yeah,
he just loved that movie.
He was a blues guy.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I think he just liked the performance by the guy who played Willie Brown.
Joe Seneca.
Thank you, Joe Seneca.
Yeah, Joe Seneca.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Music. Oh, man, I saw that movie so many times.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, let's talk about The Highwaymen, though. This is another movie this one took a long time to get going. Was there ever a time where you didn't think it was going to happen? Like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, many times, but I had the good fortune that John Lee, mm-hmm. he came on, you know, very early on the project. He was the first director, you know, me and the producer, our choice, the original Newman and Redford, their choice. Mm-hmm. So John was on it, and he and Casey, the producer, stayed on it. And there were times I went off and did other movies, mm-hmm. and it was heartbreaking for me because I feel it was the best response to a script I've ever gotten. Mm. And I felt like, I really want to see this movie made, but I just don't think it's going
to
happen.
Yeah. John, what was it that drew you to wanting to make this project?
On the surface, obviously, John's script, and they read it and loved it and said, yes, I really want to direct this movie. And unlike John, I always felt like it would get made.
Mm.
But I just thought, you know, when it's perfect time, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because every time I'd go off to do a movie and come back, I'd read it again and go, I think it's still just as good. I still want to do it.
Yeah.
So I always kept faith. I mean, or maybe it's just you get rhino skin in Hollywood where you go, I'm not going to take anything personally. I'm not going to have the highs and the lows. I'm going to try to stay right in the middle. Mm. But I was drawn to, Arthur Penn's film is one of my favorite films from 1967.
Yeah.
And I growing up in Texas, I knew about Bonnie and Clyde a lot. I knew a decent amount about Frank Hamer. And there were certain parts of the story that I didn't know, which were fascinating to me. One, the kind of cult of celebrity that was surrounded Bonnie and Clyde, mm-hmm. which was fascinating to me. It was
mm-hmm.
like kind of the Kardashians before the Kardashians.
Yeah.
And setting styles for fashion and everything else. So that was fascinating to me. But more importantly, thematically, I thought it really wasn't about Bonnie and Clyde at all. It was about these two men that were kind of an old married couple because they had spent so much time on horseback, and they had killed many men between them. They, you know, Frank had 17 bullets in him. Mm. They were born 100 years too late.
Mm-hmm.
They were better suited to be on horseback, you know, out in the desert somewhere than in a 1934 Ford V8. And I'm taken by the 100 years too late part of it, but also taken by what happens when you have a terrible gift,
mm-hmm.
and you're really good at something, you know, kind of like Will Money in Unforgiven or something. You have a
mm-hmm.
terrible gift. You're really good at killing people.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are really good at hunting and killing people, and the toll it takes on your soul, and that's what this journey is about for me.
That's one of the things I really liked about the film. I think I have an idea of what your goals were, was to kind of, you know, show this other side and maybe give Frank Hamer and Manny Gold, Manny Gold, the credit they didn't get in Penn's film. I think they're kind of perceived as jokes in that movie, kind of. Well, you know.
Or worse.
Yeah. Yeah, or worse, yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the things I really appreciated about The Highwayman is that it shows that they were real investigators.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not just, like, yeah, you say, like, they're great at killing,
mm-hmm.
but Hamer, like, he has, like, real skills.
Yes.
Is that something you really wanted to highlight
as
well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I spent a lot of time with his son,
mm.
Frank Jr., and had access to his papers, his materials, which John has also gone through, and all his early crime scene photos. He was a masterful investigator.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that he didn't believe in the investigative techniques of the federal and stuff like that. And, you know, he wanted to coordinate and work with them, but he just had real faith in his old school
mm-hmm.
Ability to track outlaws. And, you know, he had, you know, he'd say all these things like he does in the film, like, you know, outlaws and wild horses always come home, kick a
right.
dog in the side, he's going to run a big circle.
Right.
A criminal is a coyote always looking over his shoulder, you know. And,
yeah.
and but he was really good at networking and working with people. And
mm.
the first thing he would do is he would go into an area with some where something happened, talk to witnesses, try to talk to people who knew people, and kind of be fair with them and kind of, you know, try to get the story out. And Manny had a real skill for undercover, and I
mm.
think we get that. You know,
mm-hmm.
the ability to work under. In fact, he was a neighbor to Frank Hamer before he became a Texas Ranger, and they would play cards together, neighborhood friends, and Frank started to use him on a sort of unofficial undercover mission. So he had a real gift for that, too. But they were bona fide investigators, and yes, I definitely wanted to get that across, that they weren't. You know.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the gift, and it's
yeah.
not that just that Frank was a good shot. It was like, no, I will, you know, it's J. Edgar Hoover can chase you for 2 years, and I'm going to use common sense and basic tracking the same way I did on the horse,
mm-hmm.
and in 102 days, you're going to be dead.
Right.
There are patterns. You know, give me a map. I see a pattern. I see, and I'm glad, it's a great question. The other thing, the thing that he had to get into the head of his prey.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Manny signed on to go with him, he said, we're going to be living like this guy, Beryl.
Mm-hmm.
We're going into these campsites and we're finding their sardine tins.
Yeah.
We're finding their cigarettes. We're going to eat sardines, crackers. We're going to sleep in these camps. Where would he go next?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the other things I really liked about the movie was the casting, of course, Kevin Costner, Woody Harrelson. The interesting thing to me was Harrelson, because 20 years ago he was starring in Natural Born Killers, who were like a sexed up Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
he's on the other end,
exactly.
You know, playing the aging old man trying to bring them down.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about the casting process. Were they, I know you had Newman and Redford originally, but talk about were Costner and Harrelson kind of in your mind after that,
Newman and Redford, when Paul was obvious that he was not going to be health-wise able to do it,
mm-hmm.
Sent it to Kevin at some point. Kevin read it, really liked it, and felt like he wasn't old enough yet.
Mm.
A few years later, Woody read it, said, I'll do this whenever, just let me know when we're starting. And I said I would. And then 6 years later, we started. But my first experience with Kevin was him playing an escaped convict in A Perfect World. It was
mm-hmm.
my first movie that got made.
Mm-hmm.
Butch Haynes. And so I had a relationship with Kevin and was, you know, always looking for something to do with him. And, you know, he can, like all really good actors, he can do a lot. But this is in his wheelhouse. So I knew that he would be great. And I knew that Woody would be great because Woody can break your heart. And he,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then this, and that's what we needed from him. He's the conscience. If these two guys together make one person, then Woody's the conscience of this.
And they were closer to the actual ages
yeah.
of Hamer and Galt.
It worked out perfectly.
Mm. Where was the story of Hamer and Galt something that you kind of grew up with as well?
No. I mean, at a certain point, I did. But
mm-hmm.
Like John, I loved the Arthur Penn movie,
mm-hmm.
and that just fired up my interest in Bonnie and Clyde, because I was always interested in the outlaws, the gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that research, I learned about Frank Hamer.
Mm.
And so then, and beyond Bonnie and Clyde, his entire story was just one of the most incredible stories of an American character you can ever find. And yet, he was so humble and quiet and that no one knew the story. So I guess in a way, yes, I grew up with this quiet frustration
yeah.
of knowing about Hamer when not too many people
I never heard it.
I probably never really met anyone else who did. John knew him. He was from Texas. So, but I just throughout the years I was waiting for someone to do Hamer's story and it didn't happen. And things lined up where the producer asked me at one point. We were out in the desert shooting Hidalgo, and he said, "So what's next for you? What do you want to do more than anything else? What are you most passionate about?" And I thought about it for a while. I said, "You know what? It's never left me, never gone away. It's the story of Frank Hamer." He said, "Who's that?"
Yeah, I had not heard the story before either. All I knew was the Bonnie and Clyde story, which is interesting because you know the movie doesn't really allow you to really see them that much in the movie, which I'm guessing was a visual direction idea on your part, but was it also in the script?
It was, but I think John and the DP, John Schwartzman,
mm-hmm.
they took it to the next level.
I wanted to turn it into a graphic novel. I wanted to shoot Frank and Manny in a naturalistic way and to shoot Bonnie and Clyde in a way that where the clothes are too pretty and shiny,
yeah.
The shoes are shined, the cars are flashy, they're sexy, they're romantic, they're on the run. I wanted to build into the idea of what people in 1934 felt, as well as perhaps some people who had seen Penn's film who are watching this film, to kind of buy into that so that when you see him and they enter the naturalistic phase of the movie along with Frank and Manny, they're scrawny kids.
Right.
You know?
I mean, speaking for me, it it has an impact when you finally see the final scene mm-hmm. with them, you know, the actual shootout,
mm-hmm.
you know, it has an impact because you like I said, you barely had a chance to really take them in. And then when you get your best look at them, it's basically under a hail of gunfire.
Right.
Yeah,
you
get, yeah, well, that was the idea. The only time you're going to get them, because the hope was you're building up a mythos around them as
right.
you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
They're fast. They're sexy. They have the best clothes. I love them. And then you see them and you go, they're scrawny kids.
Yeah.
That's what they were. And that's the truth of it.
Yeah. Before I go, that's the scene after the shootout with the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something that actually happened? Was that something that really happened like that?
We toned it down.
Really? Because it's insane in the movie.
It's worse.
Yeah.
I was right there with Hamer and Gall when they're kind of like just kind of blown away by watching this whole spectacle.
The whole idea behind it was, you know, one, it's true, and people tried to cut off Clyde's trigger finger and his ear.
Wow.
People stole pieces of the car. They went mad. Thousands of people showed up by the time they had towed the car because, you know, 2 or 3 hours had passed since the ambush.
Yeah.
Because you have to bring the tow truck in, you have to take it to the nearby town. Word spread like wildfire.
Stores were raising the prices of cigarettes. They ran, you know, the population swelled from 4,000, I think, to like 12,000.
Yeah.
Because people are just coming in from all over, you know.
And they went mad. And it's called The Shame of Arcadia, and old Arcadians don't want to talk about it. And so the idea was that as brutal and as violent and as horrible as the ambush, I wanted it to be. And there's no joy in it. It's not like, yay, we got him. It's like, why does this have to happen?
Yeah.
This is bad for everybody. We're all going to walk away from this feeling dirty. This is, you feel bad for Bonnie and Clyde in a weird way. I do. And you feel bad for everybody. Why did this have to happen? But then it gets even worse because it's the worst of humanity in Arcadia.
I think that scene right there is almost enough to make a movie in and of itself.
All right. That's my interview with John Lee Hancock and John Fusco talking about The Highwaymen. If you get a chance to see it, it is on Netflix right now. So you can go and stream it from the comfort of your own home. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. You can listen to me here on Cinema Royale most weekends. And, of course, you can find me every single day at punchdrunkcritics.com. Thanks again for listening. Goodbye.